3. I'm Kelly. I'm an alcoholic. I want to say thank you so much to Bob for asking us to do this and for the incredible hospitality and the beautiful basket, and everything has been terrific. The dinner last night was remarkable, and thank you so much to my host Don and Steve for giving us a great welcome. And I sat there having dinner with them, and it was like I rarely find somebody else in Alcoholics Anonymous who's as pissed off about the lack of structure and meetings as I am. And I found my tribe last night, and I'm sure I found my tribe here. I want to say thank you to Steve, my husband, for coming out with me. This is our first time here, and everything has been absolutely wonderful. And I heard Charlie last night, and you know, I thought this was going to be a conference of about 50 people. And I had no idea that it was going to be this remarkable. And I have never been to a conference, either as an attendee or as a speaker, where it was really focused on the steps. And that's very unusual and very unique. And I'm very grateful to Bob for doing that, for putting this together, for having that kind of a concept for a conference. My sobriety day is September 26, 1984, and my home group is the Pacific Group. My sponsor is Millie G. I was thinking last night about how well Charlie set up this entire conference by kind of setting the tone of the first step. And Steve and I were having a meeting before the meeting this morning, and we talked about how if you don't have that first step experience and you don't have some identification that you're powerless over alcohol and your life is unmanageable, then why take the remaining 11 steps? And not that my husband is telling me how to speak, but he said, if the rest of the speakers are smart, they'll step up to the plate and hit what Charlie pitched. So that's exactly what I'm going to try to do, is he laid an excellent foundation. And if you're new, I was thinking about how that's exactly what a good sponsor should do, and he was talking about that, about how a sponsor will take you through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I come from a big book sponsorship. I come from a blue-collar approach to Alcoholics Anonymous, and my story is such that it took me a long time to come to the steps because I wasn't entirely sure that I was a real alcoholic. And I'll give you a little bit of my story before I come to the second and third step. I got sober in 1984 in Seattle. And in 1984, in the rooms, there was a movement going through the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that had nothing to do with the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, had nothing to do with the big book, had nothing to do with a home group, had nothing to do with a higher power, had nothing to do with commitments. All the pillars of an AA program that we now, pretty much all of us in the room, agree with and adhere to. This was a solution that had everything to do with finding your inner child, had everything to do with making sure that your chakras were aligned, making sure that you were following the right 12-step guru, who also said nothing about the steps of the traditions. All of my friends, when I came into AA in 84, we were all working that program of New Boyfriend Strength and Hope. And so we wore our anorexic pants and our tube tops to all the dances. We came in late. We left early. We were cruising the rooms for him. And I fell in with this group of people in Alcoholics Anonymous who had this airy-fairy, ooga-booga, you know, stardust sort of approach to staying sober. And I love that approach because that program of recovery never asked me to take my own inventory, never asked me to take responsibility for my life. So it was the easier, softer way. And my drinking kind of bears out why I would do that, because when I came to AA in 84, I didn't hear my story. I mean, I don't have a real crash and burn drinking story. My cerebral cortex isn't pierced. You know, my spinal cord isn't tattooed. There was never a DUI, never an arrest. I've yet to become a rock ho. I was never a hoochie mama. And I heard these big explosive stories from the podium, and it was like, I'm not that, I'm not that, I'm not her, I'm not him, I'm not that. And so I knew that I had horrible, horrible experiences eventually with drinking. And the way that I drink is I don't go into a bar on Friday night and, you know, meet him and go into a blackout and Downey and then wake up in Honduras with the Teamsters. I just don't do that. I drink alone in a room, a fifth of Jack Daniels, you know, depressing drug addict music, and just get to what Charlie calls there. There's this incredibly magic place that I get to when I drink, and that place erases that horrible feeling inside of me, which is feels like a broken sewer line is inside of me, and whenever you look in my eyes, you can smell the stench. That's what my alcoholism feels like, and that's what about 900 belts of Jack Daniels took away from me. So alcohol worked for me, and I am an alcoholic. So I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hear these outrageous stories, and I don't identify with any of them. So why do I need your solution? Plus, there was this big movement going through the rooms of AA in 84, and that was a lot more attractive to me than the Big Book or the Thumpers or, you know, working a step or making a direct amends. So we just put on the dog, and we went to these meetings, and we went to the dances, and everything was groovy for a long time. But then I suffer from the disease of alcoholism. I'm not a heavy drinker. I'm not a drug addict. I'm an alcoholic. And I didn't find that out until I stopped drinking. And that's the conundrum of alcoholism, and that's why we need 12 steps and 12 traditions. If I was a heavy drinker, I wouldn't be here. You'd have a different speaker. I wouldn't need meetings. I wouldn't need the steps. I wouldn't need a sponsor. So I came in, and I immediately took this exit off the broad highway, and I started working this outside issue program. And I'd love to tell you that I did it for 3 months or 3 years. I did it for 11 years sober. And I'm living proof that you can stay physically sober on the junk food of Alcoholics Anonymous. You can stay physically sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, sitting in your seat, listening to a message, going to a lot of meetings. I think that Charlie nailed it on the head last night when he used a term that I had never heard before, but it was meeting-based sobriety. And there's nothing wrong with that. If you're new, we want you to go to a lot of meetings. I still go to a lot of meetings. And we want you to be in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, because how else are you going to get the magic and the message that he talked about last night? So, but doesn't mean that you have to do the work that is suggested. And my friend Pat P. Has a wonderful saying that she says that every alcoholic in this room has a grace period by which you don't have to do a damn thing that any of these people ask you to do. Don't get a sponsor. Don't get a commitment. Don't work the steps. But if you're an alcoholic of our type, she says eventually two things will happen. You're either going to go stark raving crazy or you're going to drink again. I've only been here 8 hours. I've heard of, you know, already one friend from my past who had long-term sobriety who never went to meetings who is now drunk. I had a sponsor who had 34 years. She got drunk. It's around, and it happens. And if you be an alcoholic of our type, her chilling, you know, prophecy does come true. So I, you know, was hunky-dory, was staying sober, and I was married, got divorced, met Steve 3 years sober. And we were in Seattle together, and we did all this outside issue stuff. We ohmed, we chanted, we rolfed, we got acupunctured, we held our inner child. We spent thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars in therapy and never really got, I'll speak for myself here on, but I got the first half of the first step, which is I'm powerless over alcohol. But I never got the second half of the first step, which is my life is unmanageable. So I'll admit that I'm powerless over alcohol. I know that I drink anybody that I knew under the table. But I'll be damned to admit that looking as cute as I do as a newcomer, I'm not, my life is not unmanageable. And so what I did, you know, I just started listening to these messages, and it was like, I get that I'm powerless over alcohol, but now that I'm sober, I'm going to go achieve. I mean, I'm going to go get that degree. I'm going to get that husband. I'm going to get that house in the hills. I'm going to go get that Beamer. There's a wonderful guy that spoke at our Wednesday night meeting last week or a couple weeks ago. His name is Steve A. And he just summed up everything that I want out of Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, all I want out of the 12 steps is I want to be 10 and I want to have money. And I love that message. That's a message of depth and weight for me. And so that's what I wanted. And I, again, I'll probably sort of reference Charlie's talk, in my talk a lot, because he talked about that turning point. And there is a turning point. There's a turning point that I had when I came in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I stopped drinking. That's a big turning point. But I had to go through a different and deeper and another turning point once I was physically sober, because I thought that's all that it was about. And as I stayed physically sober off the first half of the first step, I realized that there's a little something more to this. But see, I wasn't around any long-timers, and there weren't any long-timers rooted in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous or the black parts of the big book in any of the meetings that I was going to. I was hanging with all the hip, slick, and cool people like me. And I was on this sort of path of achievement and looking for him and working on looking good, and it's an outside job and all this. And there was no one really to model for me what Alcoholics Anonymous really was. So that's what I thought it was. And when long-timers come into meetings and they speak the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, they're doing us a favor, because we're brought back again to what AA really is. I mean, it is one alcoholic talking to another. It's the black parts of the big book. This is just my experience. It's the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. It's service. It's working with the newcomer. It's having a higher power. It's having a sponsor and being willing to be sponsored, no matter how much time in AA you have. So I've laid the groundwork now as to what I did not have, what I came into in Seattle Alcoholics Anonymous in 1984. And I had the first half of the first step going, and I meet him, and we get a house, and we get married. And now, years 3 to 11, I'm lying, cheating, and stealing. And I am starting to live a double life, sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have secrets. And I have secrets from my husband. And I have secrets from everyone. And right around 11 years of sobriety, all my yets that never showed up drinking began to show up sober. And I could not figure that one out. I had horrible marital problems. I had horrible financial and legal problems. I was suicidal. And I remember what takes away the big hurt. And I remember what my best friend feels like. And I was thirsty. And I had, by that time, I'd gone back to school. I had a degree. We had a house in the hills. And me and my husband were sitting on folded-up army blankets in a house in the Oakland Hills. He was vice president of a medical company. I was an editor at the Oakland Tribune. And we were suicidal as hell. And I could not figure that one out, because we had sponsees. We were going to meetings. We thought we were in the middle of AA. And to make a long story short, what happened was I was ready to drink. And I one day, a friend of mine called and said, would you like to go to a meeting together? You haven't been to a meeting for a long time. Let's go. So I went to a meeting called the Well Bunch in Berkeley, and that night I saw a woman from the podium who I'd never seen before. She had the message of Alcoholics Anonymous that I had never heard before. She talked about the big book. She talked about being happy sober. She talked about the steps. She talked about God. She had a program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and so I asked her to sponsor me, and she said yes. And this is what we'll do. We're going to go through this thing. It's been around the program a lot of years. It's blue. It's called the Big Book. And that's where our program is. It's not, and I told her my sob story of everything that was happening to me sober in AA. And she said, God could and would if he were sought. Not a Beamer could and would if it were sought. Not a husband, not a bank account, not what it says on a business card. God could and would if he were sought. And the way that we do that, the way that we seek God, is we take steps 1 through 12. And so now, exactly what Dawn read out of the big book on page 27 is beginning to happen for me, but I don't know it. I'm now starting to make that journey into the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, with time sober in AA, falling apart, nearly drunk, and not figuring that one out. So we went through the steps, and when we went through the steps, my life was so horrible, sober in AA, that I had never admitted, ever, that my life was unmanageable. More importantly, I'd never taken, you know, steps 2 through 12. And so we went through every single step. We did it out of the big book. And she said, we're going to go through the big book. I'm going to read a page. You're going to read a page. And when there's action or direction in the book, you're going to take that action. Alcoholics Anonymous is a lot of things, but one thing it's not is it's not negotiable. So you're going to take that action, and there's going to be no feedback from you. There's no more as Kelly sees it. You're not going to om it. You're not going to chant it. You're not going to, you know, channel your favorite guru of the week. We're not going to sprinkle fairy dust on it. You know, we're going to work the program of AA. And I was just desperate enough and close enough to a divorce and close enough to, you know, financial ruin and close enough to a drink, most importantly, to surrender. And I think that is where you're in the region of getting ready for step two, is that Charlie set that up so well. And I'm glad that he talked about the bottom and the yets and, you know, the experience that he had. I didn't have that experience. I mean, I couldn't relate to those big crash and burn awesome AA stories that I was hearing. I wanted to be it. And I don't want to position myself as, you know, I bumped my head on the coffee table and came to AA because I did things as an alcoholic woman that, you know, I'm not proud of, that I'm ashamed of. I went some places. I didn't have kids to lose. I didn't have a big career to lose. I didn't have those giant losses. So I made my case different. So now I'm working the first step with my sponsor, and now she has a blue-collar approach to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I've never met this kind of person in AA before. I've always met, are you in touch with your feelings today? How do your feelings feel about your emotions now? How did they feel 5 minutes ago? Let's check in with them tonight, and let's get some purple light going, And I'm not, if you're working that program, there's a 10th tradition in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not here to be controversial, and I'm here to talk about what works for me. So I had to take a look at how my life was insane, and the reason that's important with time in AA is because I was trying to stay sober on my program and on the first half of the first step, and it almost perfectly led to absolute unbridled insanity, sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was another thing that I could not identify with, is it seemed like everybody from the freaking podium in Alcoholics Anonymous was like, I came through, like Clancy says, I came through those doors, and I've just never been so goddamn happy. Here I am. You know, I got him, and, you know, I'm in legal trouble, and it just seemed like I was hearing that stupid, idiotic message, you know, that pablum AA message every time somebody got to the podium. As I got sober, now everything's groovy, and I got the job and the career and the kids, and I got a bank account, and I have this shiny, you know, Aston Martin outside, and I was out of my mind because I had the secret that isn't working for me, and that's the scariest place that led me to step two. Is that either I'm not really an alcoholic, or there's something so wrong that this solution is not going to work for me. And that it was frightening, because I had tried everything else. I had spent thousands of dollars on another solution. Ironically, the solution that was to save my life, that is saving my life to this very moment, was hanging in every meeting that I went to. It was the 12 steps and the 12 traditions, and they were free. But I just never tried them. And you have to get to a place before you reach step two where there's that absolute unconditional surrender that you're going to do exactly what they tell you to do in the way that they do it. And I was ready to. So all it took was we went through the big book. And I had to realize that insanity is going to be there. I need two things. Johnny Harris says there are two things that give an alcoholic a spiritual experience, either alcohol or a program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I didn't have alcohol anymore, and the program of recovery that I was working was failing sadly. And there was this thing called the program of AA that no one had introduced me to, and I was about ready to die. So we went through the big book, And the first thing that I came upon was something that's quoted quite often. I think that Charlie mentioned it last night, but I know my husband Steve talks about it all the time. It's on page 52. And it's called the paragraph is called The Bedevilments, and it says this. It says, we were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. So what struck me when I read that paragraph with that sponsor of mine who took me through the book is that I'm new to Alcoholics Anonymous, really. I was like a newcomer with time, but I'm not stupid. And I noticed that there's no statute of limitations on the description of the alcoholic in the big book. It was like, oh my God. They don't bookend that with saying that, now all this goes away when you find him in Alcoholics Anonymous. All this goes away when, you know, you have a groovy, happening career. All this goes away when you have 25 years of sobriety. All this goes away when you're a big circuit speaker, when you sponsor 10,000 people, when, you know, you're at, when you're Clancy's favorite or Johnny's favorite or whoever. None of that goes away when you have certain external conditions that happen in your life. In fact, it doesn't even say that you have to be drunk to fit that description. And that's where my step two happened. My step two happened when I got into the big book and I read that description of the alcoholic, because it didn't say that that goes away. It didn't say that you had to be drunk to fit that description. As a matter of fact, that was my life, with time in AA, with sponsees, sitting in 3, 4, 5, you know, meetings a week. And so my insanity was not the insanity, the classic story of insane drinking escapades or insane drinking experiences, because I didn't have them. So it kept me in this netherworld in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time. I'm not saying it's your fault. It was my fault. I didn't identify out of choice. I was making myself different and not listening to the similarities. So because I've never been to prison, I've never been a rock hoe, I've never had my kids taken away, whatever, I'm going to stick with the comfort of the first half of the first step. And so when I read that in the big book, then I realized that the rest of the stuff that I was reading in those first pages of the big book were also true, because in chapter 2 it also said, for us there is no middle of the road solution. And that's all I'd ever worked. And if you want to really have the life that you can have here, that you see, you know, around you, the life that Charlie talked about, what Clancy talked about, there's steps, and they're in order for a reason, and I didn't know that. And so I realized that my insanity can come whether I'm drunk or whether I'm sober. And it's never too late to surrender to a second step, regardless of what your circumstances are. And I've had to surrender in a second step fashion, literally for 25 years, because I still think that I can handle it. And I still think that the solution is outside those doors. And I still think that there's something, that this is sort of child's play, and there's something much greater now than I have 25 years that I need to go out and I need to embrace and I need to conquer. But every time that I've tried that, I come back in here with a brand new level of humility that the solution is in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I've struggled with the second step for a long time. I'm not going to stand here at the podium and say that, you know, I got this thing knocked or I understand it perfectly or whatever. I still have an agenda for my life, and I have an idea of what Alcoholics Anonymous is supposed to deliver to me. And when I got that sponsor and we went through the book and we started to work the steps of AA, I saw what she was doing, and I realized there's a different dynamic here that I'm not hooked into. She started to get me to a book study, and so we went to a book study. And then I started to, as I took the rest of the steps with her, and I'm not skipping over the third step, but as I took the rest of the steps with her, I got into H&I. Now I started to go carry the message, because I finally had somewhat of a message to carry, into jails and institutions. And when I did that, I saw, now I was getting it. I mean, now the insanity of the stories that I'm hearing of women who were exactly like me are right in my face. And I was this far from being there, this far from being there. If God had not intervened, if this woman, thank God for, you know, the long-timer fundamental people in AA, she was very fundamental. And she brought me her program. And if I had not gotten that, I was this far away of being who they were. And their yets were exactly what I was heading toward, but I didn't know it. Because I don't know. I had not known the phenomenon that Clancy talks about. I'm either walking toward my next drink or away from my last drink. And alcoholism is still doing push-ups in the next room, and it's cunning, baffling, and powerful, and it's patient. And so when I started to do H&I, I began to go into Alameda County Jail, Oakland Work Furlough. And none of these women were chic. They weren't elegant. They didn't have anything. And so I will never forget this woman. She was 65 years old. She'd been arrested 7 times on the streets of Oakland for prostitution that year. And I mean, I thought, oh my, shook like Aunt B. You know, I was like, I can't believe this. I mean, I'm going to meetings. I'm following this path, this group of people in AA who are working on their outsides, and they look good and they sound good, and they've never encouraged me to carry the message. And so I'm seeing the second step right in front of me, right here. And if I hadn't surrendered, that's exactly what I would have gone to. But more importantly than that, I was able to hear the hope of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was really weird. It was the hope of Alcoholics Anonymous and the terror of the second step right in front of me when I started to do H&I work. So the hideous four horsemen of terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair were kind of right here on my shoulder, and as I was doing work with other alcoholics now, it was right in front of me as well. And I think that is the magic of the 12th step, is that you have a tad of grace that is enabling you to carry the message, and then the horror of alcoholism is right in front of you. You can't find that anywhere else except for Alcoholics Anonymous. So we began to go through the big book, and you know, the third step prayer was very, very simple. She had me get on my knees and do it with her. And we did that. And I'd never had kind of any ritual with a sponsor. And you don't have to do it that way. It's not in the big book. The third step prayer is in the big book, but you don't have to do it on your knees with a sponsor. The big book itself says, you know, you can find a quiet place and just say this prayer. But when I did it, I was so hip slick and cool that it was really a stretch to get on my knees and pray with, you know, this woman and say this prayer. And that's how I do it with my sponsees today. As goofy as it sounds, as, you know, ridiculous as they think it is, it's what was given to me, and that's what I give to my sponsees. So when I did that third step, I just kept on thinking, you know, all I want out of the third step, I want money, property, and prestige. That's all I want. I just want, I've been through this hell. I've had, you know, marital problems and money problems. And all I want is now, I want a very perverse notion of that passage that Don read on page 27. We know that what that page says is your world is going to turn on its axis. And you don't know where you're going. That's what Carl Jung, in my estimation, was saying when he talked about the alcoholic that he described. When you take these steps, something's going to happen, and some force and some power is going to take hold if you're really surrendered and you really do it with earnestness. And I wanted my world to turn on its axis in a material way. And I didn't know what was here. And you can't know what's here unless you're running with and sponsored by fundamental Alcoholics Anonymous people. Because there are a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous who are exactly like me, who want to get sober, they want to find him, they want to get married, they want to get all these accoutrements on the outside and graft the program onto the outside of them. And like this big, gigantic, you know, transformer monster, I want to, you know, get sponsees, and I want to go to conferences and be the big speaker, and I want to do all of these sort of outside things that I think that AA is. Now I'm on the path of the steps, and I have no idea where I'm going. I have no idea when I turn my will and my life over to the care of a God as I understand him, what's going to happen. And I wanted big, explosive, fabulous things to happen, and they didn't. And what happened for me was right about that time, Steve, my husband, hit bottom as well. And so we began to go to different meetings. And he had the great fortune of running into a guy named Glenn Loyster. Glenn is now deceased. He had about 38 years when he died. And Glenn was a wonderful, magnificent long-timer who was just, he was a great gentleman of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so what happened when I took the third step with my sponsor is it's like Alcoholics Anonymous began to find me, and I didn't expect that. Now, it took years. It has taken years for me to apply the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous into my life into all of my affairs. That didn't happen automatically with the third step. I'm sorry to say if you're new. But what happened for me is that it was a level of surrender. I think Bob has said before that it's the formal terms of surrender, that third step prayer, that led me on a path that I could not have determined, that I certainly wouldn't have orchestrated for myself, that I wouldn't have wanted, that I wouldn't have dreamed of. And when we met Glenn, we had never really had a long timer in our life who really was an attraction in AA, who took us to the real AA. And so when we met Glenn, Steve got Glenn as a sponsor, and so he was this great guy. He had this red van, and we would, you know, pile in Glenn's van, and we're all living in the Bay Area at the time, and we'd pile in Glenn's van, and he was sponsored by Johnny, and we'd come down to Southern California, and we'd come hear Sharon speak and Clancy speak and Bob speak and, you know, Johnny speak. And, you know, he had this great love of AA, and we got this attraction, you know, now in front of us. And if you're lucky, your home group has such an attraction. It will have a Charlie. It will have a Katie. It will have a Clancy. It'll have a Bob. It'll have a Sharon. You'll have someone in front of you who's impassioned by Alcoholics Anonymous and be able to show you how cool it really is. And that was the odd thing about my third step, is I'd always thought that Alcoholics Anonymous was the most lame, stupid, boring, organization in the world. And all of a sudden, I was seeing all of these people who were really on fire with the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't expect that from the third step. And so, as that began to happen, you know, now what happens as a result of doing the third step, I have magical thinking, and I had 11 years dry in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I have this idea that I can just carry my shtick into all my affairs, not the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, but my shtick into all my affairs. And all of my tools for living that I'd used drunk, I used sober. And so when I did the third step, I could no longer lie, cheat, and steal at work. I mean, I did, but it just was uncomfortable. And so, I had to be, you know, a wife. I had to not just be a partner. I had to be in this marriage. I had to be a wife to my husband. I had to do all of these, quite frankly, you know, these kind of hokey things that I never wanted. Because I knew that there were these principles in AA, and I knew that they weren't, I knew that I wasn't working them. And I wasn't working them because I'd never been in the book, and I didn't have a sponsor who took me through the book, and I didn't have a sponsor who modeled that. All the sponsors that I had in AA were half-measure sponsors. I loved them for their hair and their cars. And so I never had somebody who was a real program attraction. So now I've done the third step, and now, to be quite honest, all of the shtick and the tap dancing and the lying and everything that I've done for 11 years, you know, I'm still doing that, quite frankly. Just because I've done the third step prayer on my knees with a sponsor doesn't mean that I've changed. But what I have done is I've formally asked a power greater than myself to enter my life and now direct my life in all my affairs. And so, you know, I came to believe in the second step that there is a power greater than myself, a power greater than my ego, than my commercial aspirations. And it did begin to happen. And the way that it began to happen is not romantic, it's not sexy, it's not cutting edge. I began to continue to practice, you know, lying, cheating, stealing at, you know, 11 years sober. And only this time after the third step, it really kicked my butt. I mean, it really began to hurt because God was like, you've done an honest third step on your knees. Now I'm gonna get right here. And as you start to come in late and sneak in the back door, it's not going to feel good. You can still practice all of these character defects, these, you know, crutches that you've had in your life sober for a long time if you want to. But I'm going to now introduce consequences. And that's what I didn't expect from the third step and what I really resented. Because I believe that I can practice, I can mouth AA over here, and I can practice something entirely different over here. And now because for some odd reason there was this weird thing that my sponsor had me do called the third step, and all of this, you know, stuff is hitting the fan. And I thought that I'd do the third step and it'd be, you know, all wonderful and I'd have, you know, I'd have a wonderful marriage immediately. No, I had to work on that marriage. I got married, but I didn't work on the marriage. I wasn't bringing anything to the table. I had no skin in the game. I had no skin in the game at work. And all the institutions of life, and there are three chapters in the big book that discuss the institutions of life, you know, two wives, two employers, and the family afterward. And the reason I think Bill Wilson put them in there is because we do so badly at them. And I have to have that blueprint because I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm thinking about myself in all those areas of life. So now, those three chapters are like glowing in the dark as my sponsor, as I'm going through them with my sponsor. And now I have to, because of the third step, because of that damn third step, I have to start practicing these things that I'm discovering in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have to start practicing out there. And I continue to be amazed at the fact that how hard it is to step up to the plate, quite frankly. Because for me, the easier, softer way is just they won't find out. Bob Decker used to say that I always paint behind the toilet. He was a painting contractor. And I hate that notion. I hate that I have to paint behind the toilet. They don't look behind the toilet. They're never going to see it. I know how to walk in late. I know how to hide. I know how to live in the darkness and the shadows. And what the third step said to me was, that's the old life, and you can't live the old life that much longer without picking up a drink. And so now I had to change, and I had to stop, and I had to change my behavior. And I didn't, you know, if you're new, I wasn't sincere. I wasn't spiritual. It's just I stood at the turning point. I stood at the turning point twice in my sobriety. Before I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I got physically sober. That was a turning point. And then when I was 11 years sober, I was absolutely near death and ready to pick up a drink, and that was the second turning point. And turning points, if, you know, my husband says, I love this, he says, with every surrender, the surrender has to be followed by an action, and the action is normally what you don't want to do. And what was terrifying to me was I didn't want to be normal. I should tell a little bit about my upbringing in my childhood. My dad was, there were eight marriages between my two parents. I really wanted what my father had. He had a sports car dealership in La Cañada, and he sold Lotus Elan and MGs and, you know, Mini Coopers in the early 60s, and he had this very exotic life. He raced all over the world. He never met a miniskirt that he didn't like, and he wasn't a cross-dresser. And so he chased a lot of women, and he had this exotic life. And whenever he drank his Rob Roys and his martinis, his broken sewer line went away too. And so that's what I wanted. He never had to be responsible to anything, and he got this great, awesome, explosive life. And he got away with it, and I want to get away with it. And I thought that alcohol could let you get away with it. But then I found that I hit a bottom and I couldn't drink anymore. And it wasn't enough to just stop drinking. I had to actually now surrender and turn my will and my life over to something that I don't entirely understand, but it got to be of my understanding. So I stood at this turning point when I knew that my ethics and my practices and my standards weren't going to cut it anymore if I was going to stay sober, if I was going to have more than physical sobriety. And now the third step has to, now we have to put legs on the third step. And actually that'll be discussed next by, like Polly is talking about 4 and 5, but when you put legs on the third step is when you get into a fourth step. But I had to change my behavior. And there's a place in the big book that really illustrates this. And when my sponsor took me through this, she made a big deal out of this one passage in the big book. After the 12 steps, after the ABCs on page 60, it says, being convinced we were at step 3, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Okay, there you have me. You got me. I can't run from that. I can't argue that. I can't manipulate that. I can't, be a courtroom lawyer. But she said it was very interesting. I think it was the second tradition, she said in the previous edition of the Big Book, before that paragraph of being convinced, they used to make a much bigger deal of make sure that you are in agreement with what precedes that, with these 12 steps, and what those 12 steps say. And if you're in agreement with that, then you're ready for the third step. Because after the third step is when you're going to do the rest of those steps. And the first three steps, at least in my experience, were what it says on page 27. They're, I'm getting ready to change now. I'm getting ready to shift. But I can't resist that change any longer, or else I'm going to drink. And that's where I was. So I had to let go of, a long-winded way of saying, I had to finally let go of the quick fix that I saw when I grew up. I had to let go of, no, it's not okay to go from man to man to man to man. I have a husband. It's a loving husband. It's a great marriage. I need to be with this marriage. I need to be with this individual. I need to be a wife to Steve. I need to begin to practice what those three chapters in the big book are about. I can't mouth it at meetings. I can't tell my sponsees to do it and then not do it. I have to now begin to change at work. I can't do this, idiot sophomoric thing of, I'm calling in late again for the ninth time this month. I mean, I had to clean up my act. And I knew that I didn't want to be a caricature in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what I saw. I began to see myself become a cartoon in AA. And when I was a drunk, I was a cartoon. I was an absolute joke. And I knew that I was headed for that. So I began to have to try to change that behavior. And, I really wanted to do that third step and have it be a big explosive life. I never wanted to be, my dad had this really amazing, explosive, fabulous life, and my mom was really boring. She worked in payroll at Downey Unified Schools. So I was like, guess who I want to be? And yet she showed up, and she did this, kind of humdrum job. And I realize now that in order to be sober, it doesn't matter whether the job is humdrum. It doesn't matter whether, I need to forget about myself and be in the institutions of life and carry my best program into them. And to this day, I fail. To this day, I'm not perfect at that at all. But when I do begin to... there is one thing that has begun to happen in these last few years, and that is when I go and I show up and I do a good job, there's a remarkable look on my employer's face, and that's worth it to me. And that inspires me to do it the next day. And I never had that. I always get the cross look, and you fail us again. And, I mean, we're supposed to get that when we're drunk, not when we're, sponsoring people in AA and 11 years sober, but that's what I got my entire sobriety. And I just got sick and tired of living like that. So for me now, kind of living the third step and the second step, I have to surrender to what you all are doing and what you all have found in the big book. And I have to let go of what my old ideas are. And I love my old ideas. I have had significant resentments in my recent years sober. And they've been, what a surprise, toward the personalities in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have to act better than I feel, and I have to clean my side of the street. And so when I do the third step every day, and I, it's a weird way to live, because I now need to live a different way than what I'm engineered and wired to do. And it's uncomfortable, and it, I'll tell you, my life has never been better. I mean, my marriage has never been better, and my employment has never been better, and my experience of Alcoholics Anonymous has never been better. And without the third step, I'll set up, a little bit, going into the fourth step. When I take those first three steps, they really talk about in the big book about, this whole argument that we have about there is no God. Who are you to say there's no God? We rejected God. I mean, the whole thing for me in the first three steps is that we have to know that there is something, and that it is safe to turn our will and our life over to that something. And thank God we're in Alcoholics Anonymous. If it had been a church, if it had been a religious organization, I'd be drinking now. But we have to have that, because in the fourth step, I'm going to clean house. And that house cleaning is going to be a lot of crap that I don't want to look at. And I'm going to have to unearth that if I don't want to be back on page 52. And I know what it's like to be there, because I lived there for a long time without being able to drink. It's said around here that when an alcoholic is in a dry drunk, they begin to work the 12 steps in reverse. And I started to do that. And when that happened, what led me to taking the second and third step with my sponsor in a significant way was that I was a dry drunk and I didn't know it. And so in working the 12-step in reverse, I I had sponsees and I had to let them go because I was too busy trying to be successful. And I had to then in work the 11th step in reverse. I stopped prayer and meditation because God wasn't delivering to me what I expected out of Alcoholics Anonymous. In working steps 9 and 10 in reverse, I made a list of all the people that harmed me and I wrote them a letter. And so I continued to write to work the 12 steps in reverse until I came, basically to work, if you're a dry drunk, you'll take your power and your will back. And there is no loving God. And I can prove it because look at my life and I'm in AA. So I wanted so desperately to live a different way, but living it a different way is really, it's difficult for me. And it's uncomfortable, and it's against my nature. So what began to happen is the more that we started to hang out with Glenn Loyster, and Steve, went through the steps himself, is we got more and more of an idea of what that third step, of what a living second and third step was. And I remember that, Glenn would have restraint. He would have, he would surrender his ego, and he would surrender his time in AA or his stature in AA, and he would let somebody else be right. And these were things that I'd never seen before. I'd never really witnessed this in anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so at the same time that we're on fire with Alcoholics Anonymous and going to the Southern California Convention and coming down to Pacific Group or Bellflower and, getting into all of this stuff, we're seeing this other side of the third step through Glenn, through a long-timer in AA. And, he went through a horrible divorce, sober, very, very embarrassing public, thing for him. And we saw the surrender in him of not retaliating. We saw the surrender of him of knowing that somehow there is a plan here and this wasn't his plan, but he walked with grace and dignity through this event that was happening right very publicly in front of him, and we were right behind him. We were following in his footsteps. So I, if you're new, it's extremely important. You can stay sober, not doing any of this stuff, but it's extremely important, I think, to get the foundation of the first three steps, because the next, steps 4 through 12 are going to be a lot of house cleaning. It's going to be, even more, getting rid of self so that finally a power greater than myself can come in and guide and manage my life. And that's when I work best. That's when my life is the most peaceful. But I can't get there without, you know, being very specific and setting up, you know, as Charlie did last night, this whole notion that I am an alcoholic. My life is unmanageable, drunk or sober. See, I just thought it was drunk. And I thought that, you know, sanity, I mean, I wasn't that insane out there. So I don't identify, I don't know why I need to take a second step. But my insanity happened even, which was more scary to me, it happened sober. And I knew I couldn't drink again, and I was at that jumping off place. I couldn't drink and I couldn't stay sober, so I'm screwed. I'm what we call in Alcoholics Anonymous, screwed. I can't move forward. I can't go back. I've tried every other solution in the book. I'm out of ideas. A loving God, a gracious God, you know, brought this solution to me. And then I had to admit, you know, I wasn't like I had trouble with God in the third step, but it was tough for me to let go of the notion that, you know, that it's a loving God, because my life had been in the toilet drunk and now it was in the toilet sober. What loving God? And a loving God is now, when I let that God into my life, vis-a-vis the third step, that God is giving me the life that he or she or it is determining and running and planning. And that was the big surrender in step three for me, and step two, was that anytime I want to go back to insanity, I can go back to it, because all I have to do is stop going to AA and get my shtick going again and practice, practice my power and my will in all my affairs. And that exploded in my face. And so I found that it's something that I'm not good at, but that I have to do every single day, because if I don't, it's so easy for me to revert. It's so easy for me to go backward. And the God of my understanding today, I don't have like a real strong, I'm not religious, but I knew that it had to go from being a magical thinking God, a fairy dust God, to a real living, breathing higher power. And I surrender to that every morning, and I don't understand it entirely. But see, when I was in all these outside issues, I understood it perfectly. It was very well defined. You know, it had a halo, and it had, you know, I mean, it had a name. I named it, and it had, you know, I made build altars to it, and I burnt candles and did incense, and I had all of this ritual to kind of an airy fairy Santa Claus higher power. And the higher power that I found through the second and third step is not that higher power at all. It's much more mysterious, and it's much more, actually, it's just much more mysterious, because I don't know on any day what's going to be given to me. I know that it's simple, and that's the shift that had to happen for me in the second and third step. If I don't want to go back into the insanity that I knew drunk and the insanity that I knew sober, I'm going to have to get a simple concept of a higher power. And then whatever is God's will is what's on the plate for today. Whatever is God's will is what I'm going to go do once I get off my knees. And all I have to do is stay out of drama, stay out of trouble, don't mouth off, call my sponsor, you know that the next task that's in front of me is what God's will is. And so I had to remove from the third step this expectation that now I'm going to have this big, impressive, explosive life like my father did. Well, he had a higher power too. It was called martinis. He had sex and he had alcohol, and he had a great looking, you know, sparkly, fabulous movie star life. And he died destitute. He died absolutely destitute. So I need to stay in the middle, and I need to stay boring, and I need to stay plain vanilla, and I need to stay simple, and I need a higher power that I can just turn it over to. And I had to do that this morning with this talk, and I've had to do that every time that I go make an amends to somebody that I don't want to do. I've had to do it time and time again with all kinds of things that I think that are far too difficult for me. And yet, for some odd reason, the higher power that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous has never failed me. It's funny. It came from the black parts of the big book. Anything that comes from the black parts of the big book will never fail you if you're an alcoholic of our type. You have to be an alcoholic of our type. can't be a social drinker. It's not for social drinkers. It's not for heavy drinkers. You have to be an alcoholic. And so that was what, you know, that was what the beauty of the Big Book gave me in going through the second and third step with my sponsor, is that whole notion of, you know, we've only known that for us there is no middle of the road solution. And then, even more so from chapter two, it said, you know, we found a common solution. And that was the big shift for me in two and three, is that, see, I'm not a common anything. And so I'm not going to do anything common. I'm not common, you know, but you all, these 12 steps and these 12 traditions, they're fine for you garden variety drunks. But it's far too simplistic and pedestrian a solution for somebody like me who has this deep psychic wound that takes a very expensive, sophisticated solution. And so, you know, when I read the Big Book and I saw that in chapter two, that we found a common solution, you know, you can't have our program unless you're a common drunk. I remember when Johnny Harris said that at a Big Book retreat that I went to, that he holds every year. You cannot have our, only when you're a common alcoholic can you have our solution. And when I did it, I got a simple life and I got a peaceful life. And I really think that with the horror of alcoholism, whether you're drunk or whether you're sober, that's what I'm looking for. That's what I want, is I want a solution that gives me a peaceful life. And every year I'm sober, I get more boring. Every year I'm sober, I get much more kind of sitting deeper in my seat in AA. And it could be different. I could be one of those people who had time and went out. I could be one of those people who never got it. I'm hoping that that never happens to me. And I'm very, very grateful for a long-timer sober. Sober sponsor who gave me a solution that had depth and weight, and that's what I was missing. My experience is that when we take this second and third step, that I'm now starting on a journey into the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have had enough years on the periphery of AA. I've had enough years working what we wouldn't call a vision for you. I've had enough years of living in my own personal hell of being a dry drunk. And in order to get what Charlie talked about last night, the sky seats, I love that analogy. In order to get that, I have to have a surrender, and I have to believe and trust once and for all that there's a power greater than myself that I can turn my will and my life over to. And what is my will? It's my will. My will is I want everything in the world out there, and that may not be God's will. My life is the action that I take on a daily basis. So when I get off my knees after the third step prayer every morning, I have to trust that if it's a boring ho-hum job, plain vanilla life, then, man, all I need to do is do one H&I meeting, hopefully more than one, but, you know, all I need to do is go visit somebody in a prison or a treatment center or what have you, work with a newcomer whose life is absolutely in the toilet, and know that that is the greatest thing that I could get from Alcoholics Anonymous, is that peaceful, sober life. I knew that going a whole hour and a half was going to be a lot, so I'm going to read something from the Big Book, and then I'm going to wrap up a little bit early. I was told by my sponsor when I got sober that there's a great passage in the Big Book that I love. It's on page 100 of the book, and I see so much of the third step prayer in this. And I'm going to read it to you, and I'm going to wrap up. It's from the chapter Working with Others, and it says this. It says, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. Thank you.